And welcome to Tell Me Your Story. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. This is New Paradigms for a New World, and we come your way every Saturday from 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific Time. We stream live on the internet at richarddugan.com and newspress.com. And we archive these programs at richarddugan.com, the radio show's page. And we have got a slew of interviews there for you to go through. It'll take you quite a long time to listen to them all. We're very excited to have them available to you. That's really the point of this program, is to bring these different points of view to you, have you decide what it is that is important to you, and put those kinds of things into practice. And we are really looking forward to our guest today, a gentleman whose music I guess I could say I grew up with, although it would be more in the late 70s, early 80s that I was growing in my spiritual life, my spiritual walk, if you will, in terms of trying to find out who I am and where I came from and where I'm going and why I'm here. You know, the simple little ultimate questions that we ask throughout our life. And his music, obviously, is his purpose here. And we're going to get involved in that with our guest, who created an album, which I still happen to possess. And it's entitled Spectrum Suite, but its original title was Chakra Suite. You may or may not know of that album title, and I'm hoping that you have heard of Stephen Halpern. And Stephen, I thank you so much for joining us on the program.
Well, thank you, Richard. A delight to be here.
One of the things we're going to talk about today as we move forward in our program is having to do with sound and or music therapy and the effects that various types of tones and music play on, how it plays upon the human psyche, the brain patterns, those kinds of things. We're going to get into a little bit of that. But I'd like, first of all, for you to give us a little background about Stephen Halpern and this, quite honestly, this incredible music that you created. And I thought so back in the late 70s, early 80s, especially listening to Spectrum Suite, which I think it's safe to say kicked off a genre that didn't exist before you. I don't know if you necessarily created the genre, but you certainly created the music that filled that space.
Right. I began, and thank you for that intro. I've always been very sensitive to sound, and at an early age, in the school music program, started playing trumpet, and at that point, like everyone else, was reading Little Black Dots, typically written by dead white European composers. In seventh grade, when I got into junior high school, heard some ninth graders improvising, playing music without reading notes, and the proverbial light went on in my head, and I said, that's for me. How do you guys know how to do that? And they gave me a couple of insights. I started taking lessons and learned about improvisation and started having the experience of tapping into that level of creativity where the music just begins to come through you. And I had some experiences that I would find out years later were related to some past life experiences where I snuck out into the auditorium, played my trumpet in the dark, and heard echo and reverb, which I had never really experienced. But that was, in a sense, where ancient ceremonial uses of music for healing and for spiritual upliftment were carried out. In my tradition that I was born into, we didn't have the big cathedrals that had lots of reverb, and just that quality of sound took notes and made them into tones, made them almost visceral. Well, that was a beginning, and then through college I had the honor and privilege of studying with some major poets and artists who instructed us in the role of an artist and the attitude of an artist, and also had an opportunity to study with some great jazz musicians, at which point I really began to open up to my own abilities of getting into the flow and having that creative fire and the high of tapping in to another level of reality. Well, when I came out, so at that point I was a jazz musician. It was when jazz and rock were first coming together, and that was what I thought I was going to be doing. I got good at that. There was not a lot of money. And I came out west before for a two-week visit before I went back to graduate school. I had an experience in the woods outside of, and actually under some majestic redwood trees outside of Santa Cruz, and heard music in my head that was what I was reading about in some of the ancient books about the healing powers of music, about music to get one in touch with higher levels of reality, with the divine, with the universe, with God, whatever we called it, either through the yogic tradition, through reading about the ancient use of music in Greece and China. And I really wanted to know what that would sound like in the late 20th century, and that's what I was going back into graduate school to study. Suddenly, I had an experience where the music basically made itself audible to me, and I also heard in my head, this is the music you've been praying to hear. Your job is to bring this out to the public. Mm-hmm. Now, this is now November 1969. There were no recording studios that an independent person could do that to. But I started playing, and it was music that would come through on a piano. You couldn't do this kind of music on a trumpet or an electric guitar, the other instrument I was professional on. And when I played for other people, they said, wow, this makes me feel so great. People would spontaneously start doing yoga or meditate or just get into some really deep places. And at some of the programs that I was performing at, major scientists like Dr. John Lilly and Dr. Stanley Krippner said, well, we see that people are responding well, but we call that subjective responses. If you want to be taken seriously, you have to do some scientific research, biofeedback research, to prove that your music is doing something different than other music. And I'm going, you know, I'm trained as a musician. I don't know about statistics or science. And the great answer to that was, so hire scientists, hire a laboratory, and they can test out your work. And that's what I did in my graduate research studies. And the results really changed my life. In fact, one of the research assistants said, this is not just a graduate-level bit of research. This is your life. You really, you have something here, and you need to share this with the public. Well, this was 1973. It still wasn't an easy way to do it. But I, within a couple years, the technology has changed. There was a the first recording studio that was open to an independent that was multi-channel. There's an 8-channel recording facility there, and I was the first client, made my first album, didn't know what I was doing, and started taking it to places that I would go to, yoga centers, health food stores, healing centers, and words and show, and then I would be invited to speak at holistic health expos, and I would start putting on my own programs, and word started going around as I would also go on radio and TV shows and get interviewed in the press, because no one had been talking about the healing powers of music with anything new that would really demonstrate and provide a different experience. So in addition to then knowing the music, I had to learn about business, I had to learn about marketing, and I had to learn about how to be a media spokesperson to help get the music out there, because as I found out, there were lots of people who didn't want information about the most ancient art form, the healing arts of music, which was legal, which was non-fattening, which was energy renewable, which was drug-free, that was a competitive economic threat to certain interests, so they would rather you not know about that.
Wow.
And then I even found out that there was a classical music mafia, essentially, that also had been studying and learning about propaganda and PR and advertising. And to this day, what many people believe to be true about classical music is not based on fact, but it's on very savvy marketing that people never understood was marketing and PR. It was just always accepted as fact. And I was the guy that raised my hand and was, you know, basically taking that on and exploding the myth that the, particularly for relaxation and healing, mm-hmm. that the best choice was classical music. That was your only choice until people like me and Joel Andrews and Yassos and some of the other early pioneers started doing our music, because no one was thinking that heavy metal or rap or rock, or even the jazz rock music that we're playing was great, it's exciting, but it wasn't healing on a physiological level.
Mm-hmm.
Most music was designed to be, you know, something you would dance to or you could escape into as for entertainment, but there were more subtle healing responses that were very different than the emotional responses. And I said, I'm not, you know, putting down the emotional aspect, but there's another whole realm, and no one is working with that. And that's what I proceeded to explore and focus on the healing that happens when you assist an individual to get into a relaxation state that allows the body's own healing energies to manifest, to be supported rather than distracted, rather than counteracted. And that is why I focused so much in this area. Again, when I started, no one else was working with it. People said, well, what do you call this kind of music? And we made up different names. It was consciousness music. It was contemporary instrumental, all words that... Mm-hmm.
Even New Age.
Many letters.
Yeah, even New Age music is what it was classified as well.
Well, ultimately, it became that way because actually the music industry, because they didn't know anything about and were not interested in spirituality, when we came up with these other words, we had already, musicians like myself were performing and invited at the New Age conferences in the 70s that dealt with the Comet Kohoutek, with the crystal energy and
the earliest
of the... whole life expos, basically the music industry said, well, we need a simple name that only has a couple letters, so it'll be like rock or jazz or pop. New Age, well, it has two words, but at least it's only three letters each, so we could fit it on the little cards
little
that we
tab.
Have in the store.
Yes.
And that's how New Age basically became the name. And then in the 80s, when there started becoming if not a groundswell, a lot more interest in the genre, the major labels came in and said, we are going to take over this area. And that's when the major label put in people like Yanni and John Tesh and
mm-hmm.
Enya
mm-hmm.
and pushed out many of the independents. But... and would co-opt ads, and then the other things would go on. But it at least placed the music in a more public profile, and within that context, at least it was allowed to germinate and get out into the world. And that's the world that people like myself would go to the bookstores back before Borders and Barnes and Noble, when there were neighborhood metaphysical stores and New Age stores and crystal stores. My music was like the first music in those stores.
Mm-hmm.
That was before other musicians were recording, and it was just obvious that people who were interested in crystal power and crystal healing and meditation would be looking for a soundtrack that would harmonize and support those activities,
mm-hmm.
something that the major music industry had no interest in until there was enough of an audience that could show sales and money, at which point they started getting interested.
So when we take a listen to, as well as a look at, the music of Stephen Halpern, we're talking not just about notes and tones. We're talking about vibration.
Yeah.
And the same word holds true for crystals, holds true for ideas, for meditation. People also use the word resonance and so forth. Now, I'm curious, you made the comment, you described the whole scenario that was unfolding there in the 70s as far as the record companies and so forth. And I'm curious, since nobody else was making this music, I would assume that in order for you to sort of recenter and not get distracted by all of that stuff, you had to go back and listen to your music to kind of get focused again. Because I hear music too. I mean, maybe we all do, but just some of us are more connected to it and tuned into it, pardon the pun, than others. And then there are those such as yourself who are then able to transmit it outside of self and into the manifest world, if you will, for others to enjoy and to benefit from. So when you are creating this music, is there any thought to the specific purposes or uses or benefits or attributes of this music on the human being?
Well, absolutely. The general perspective I had was crystallized when I was reading in the mid-70s a book about the work of Edgar Cayce and his predictions, and one of the readings had to do with music, and in that was something called the Musician's Prayer. And I remember reading it and being able to read it in my mind. I was saying the words even before I read them. In other words, on some level, I knew that. And what that's about is that the music is coming from a place of peace. The intention is to support the highest and best in the listener. It's not about showing what a great musician I was. That was the earlier part of my career in the jazz and jazz rock part. Ego mm-hmm. was a big part. I could play louder and faster and more sophisticated scales than another trumpet player. That was a good thing. It was about ego and virtuosity. The new music was more about creating sacred space, creating a place that assisted the listener in making their own connection to what we might call the quantum field or to divine essence or what their own spirituality. So that's the general aspect. And my first recording was specifically focused on the technology of doing that by resonating and activating the seven energy centers, the seven subtle energy centers, the chakras, mm-hmm. using specific tones that related to these chakras. And that's why Chakra Suite was my first album, because it had a specific story as well that wound up being very helpful in speaking to the media rather than just having a more generic aspect. However, in 1975, virtually no one in the media knew what chakras were. Most stores didn't know what chakras were. So I could not use that as the title of my album. So I called it Spectrum Suite because I was working also with the electromagnetic spectrum and the healing that happens from coordinating light and color and sound and music and the vibrations of the chakras. By 1999, now that yoga was, you know, a worldwide and certainly an American phenomenon with millions of people tuning in there and learning about chakras, stores now understood what chakras were, but they didn't understand what spectrum energies were. So it was time to go back to the very earliest title, and what I saw immediately was sales went up 10 times because the title now resonated with what people understood and were looking for.
Mm-hmm. So now, you know, we're talking about vibration here in terms of the music. Knowing what you know now, does it make a lot of difference what instrument you use, whether it be organic or electronic in terms of your reference to technology?
Well, that's a great question. It does. But it's not limited in terms of organic, i.e. acoustic versus electric. There are, Richard, I can tell you how many concerts I've been forced to play on out-of-tune pianos that were certainly very painful and unhealing for me. But a great grand piano is an incredible instrument.
Oh, yeah.
And my first recording used an instrument that had recently come on the market, which was developed by Harold Rhodes, that's R-H-O-D-E-S, that was basically a series of tuning forks played by a keyboard. And when I first heard this instrument, chills went up and down my spine. It was the sound that I heard in my head in that meditation in 1969.
Wow.
So I went out and sold my second guitar and second trumpet, borrowed some money, and got that piano, that electric piano, and that was what I used in my first recording. And that was a sequence that it really changed my life, because not only was I bringing a new form of music that didn't have a big melody, didn't have big chord progressions, but it also had a sound that no one had heard before.
Yeah.
And that made an immediate effect that people could experience and recognize, this is something different than I'm getting anywhere else. And that was what helped really get my career started. I believe that if I had done my first album on piano, it may not have had its impact, because the sound was just of a piano, and
yeah,
it would have gotten confused. Now, over the years, I have done a lot of recordings on grand piano, and I have had a lot of magical moments where I virtually levitated off the piano bench because of the energies that were coming through me at the grand piano. At those points, the intention, going back to your question, was typically the same, that I am here to be of service. I am here to be, in a sense, an antenna and a transducer for higher dimensional vibrations and frequencies to come through and help make them audible so that I can share them with others to create more peace and harmony out here in the world.
And you didn't fall into the pun of being an instrument of. But I get your
point. I've used that a lot,
yeah,
because that's really what it is, becoming an instrument of the instrument.
Yeah.
And that was something that the jazz musicians and the poets taught us back in 1968 and 69. That's how they were describing it. But they would reframe that in the same language that the ancient Greek poets used, that they were channeling their daemon, their muse.
Mm-hmm.
So this concept holds true through Mozart. When people ask Mozart, Wolfi, how do you compose? He says, well, actually, to tell you the truth, a lot of times I'm just walking down a road or sitting at my desk and my head fills with music and I write it down. And for people like me, we're going, well, okay, if he's hearing music, where is the music coming from? But most people would rather not deal with that and just say, Mozart was a genius, rather than Mozart was a channel for some higher frequency music coming through, and he was the guy that, you know, amongst other of the great composers, really put that out there. The problem nowadays, and this is part of what happened with the Mozart effect, is if you buy five different Mozart albums of the same composition, the interpretations by the different artists will give you basically five very different sounding recordings. Which is the one that was most in line and simpatico with what Mozart would have played? It's
right.
Hard to know.
Well, I want to talk more about the Mozart effect. I also want to talk about current events on and their effect on your music. And I also want people to have an opportunity here to listen to a little bit. Now, this is not from Chakra Suite. This is actually Shambhala. And I'm playing a little bit of that now. We're going to go out of this segment with that, and we're going to come back and talk more about these other elements as well. We're talking with Stephen Halpern. He is my guest, and we are very excited to have him on the program today because he's enlightening us as to the creation of his work, body of work, over the last 40 years, 30 to 40 years, and we're extremely glad to have him on the program. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. Stay right where you are. Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host on this beautiful Saturday afternoon as we are talking with Stephen Halpern, and he is, I hesitate to use the word musician because you do a lot more than just create music. It's gone beyond that in the last 40 years for you, or if you want to say 50, because you were talking about going back to 69 when you were hearing this music in your head and then began the process of putting it down for the rest of us to not only enjoy but benefit from. I wanted to touch base on the events of life, current events, past historical events that you and I both have lived through. And we're probably right around the same age. The moon landing, I remember. The resignation of Nixon. The taking of the hostages in 76. The election of Ronald Reagan. The falling of the wall. Going to war in 1990 in the Persian Gulf. And again, I could list all kinds of different things. How have the events that have been unfolding throughout the past, say, 40 years affected and or influenced the music that you have, the vibration, I'll use that term, the vibration that you have created that we all have the opportunity to benefit from?
Wow. Well, any artist, as any musician or any individual brings their experience to what they do. So all of life experiences, whether it's a romantic relationship and a breakup that may typically involve playing some blues and making up some new lyrics, you know, in the moment, or going deeper into the healing space of deep meditation. For me, all that I've gone through has, if anything, it made me more sensitive to the effect of different frequencies and different vibrations, so that when I go into the studio, because I, obviously I have to make an appointment with the studio, my band, what I refer to them, my invisible band, most people can't see them, but some people do, and whatever it is, since I don't hear any voices, I know that sometimes in the studio I'm playing from my own experience, and there are sometimes that there are creative breakthroughs. In fact, on some of the videos that I posted over the last couple years, because I always record on the anniversary of the first date that I recorded on January 4th and 5th, 1975, I usually find myself and make it a point to be in the recording studio. And at one point, we had a video camera going, and you could see the moment when a different energy comes through, and I smile, my eyes are closed, and I'm playing completely with my eyes closed, which is something I don't usually do. And the music that came through was really extraordinary, and I didn't really hear it until I listened to the playback after the song was over. So in answer to your question, it's an ongoing process, but it also, as the stresses in the world and some of the things that you mentioned become more unbalancing, it's caused me to look at some more powerful soundtracks to rebalance, to help me maintain balance and get back into balance, and also as well to be able to share that with the people who tune into my music, with the public, with my fans. For instance, through stress, which is the main overarching issue that we all deal with, mm-hmm. and how that manifests through pain or through now sleep problems. A couple years ago, I started having, really for the first time, difficulty falling asleep. So I said to myself, well, you know, this will give me, obviously I now am more motivated to pursue some soundtracks specifically for sleep. And in dealing with the deep stress that's going on in the world, been said by many, many others, if we're going to experience peace on our planet, we have to really begin with peace within ourselves. From research with brainwave biofeedback, we know that deep meditation in the deep alpha and deep theta brainwave states between 4 and 7 cycles per second for theta and 8 and 12 for alpha, particularly at 8, that hooks us into and synchronizes us, or we use the word rhythm, trains us to the dominant vibrational frequencies of our planet. That is a way to instantly hook us up into a higher resonance and to make it possible for people like me who come from New York, who are type A individuals, and when the field of music therapy, who I first took my music to in the early 70s, said, well, it is impossible for any music to relax anyone in less than 20 minutes because, you know, the classical masters, it takes 20 minutes to make that shift. I said, excuse me, I'm from New York. What do you have that could get me there in a minute? And they said that, as I said, that's impossible. I said, well, no, it isn't. In fact, my research proves that it's possible if you use the right music.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them said, well, that's great. We want to know about it. And others said, get out of here. We only deal with the dead European classical masters. Well, that really limits your options. But in answer to your question, it has focused my more recent recordings in coming up with really functional, really usable soundtracks that make use of the general context within which I compose, and by the use of certain additives in addition to the music, making it what we might call industrial strength or extra strength, so that if you're looking for an aid to getting instantly into a deeper meditative state, an album like the one that I produced last year called Deep Theta would be the one that you would want instantly, because it gives you the way the synchronization technology is added to the music resonates with that part of your brain, and your brain responds in a way to match the frequencies that are encoded in the soundtrack. So whereas with Chakra Suite or many of my recordings, you have the flexibility as a listener to go deep or to stay just in a lighter meditative state, these are what I consider to be deeper soundtracks. And you don't have as much freedom, but when you make the choice to go there, this is something that will get you to that place. Rather than waiting 20 minutes to get there, you're there for a minute, and then if you only have 5 minutes, you could have 5 really profoundly useful and effective minutes rather than waiting to get there and then running out of time.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that one of the aspects that comes up for me, and of course here in the West, you know, we want it instantly. We want to, that's why they make all the pills that they make.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the purple pill and the green pill and the blue pill and the yellow pill and whatever the colors are. And it reminds me of that 60s song, one pill makes you larger and another pill makes you small. And they're the ones now who are running the pharmaceutical companies, my guess is. I just sit here and I go, okay, if something is giving me heartburn, I don't need to take a purple pill. I need to stop eating that which is giving me heartburn. And so I don't even have to take the pill.
Yes.
And it doesn't matter whether, but I love that. Yeah, but I love not having heartburn better than eating what's not good for me. And we're all in process and in progress. I'm curious about, we all know about the progression of things. I mean, as I go back and I listen to some of my old interviews, whether it's from the Tell Me Your Story series or going back 20 or 30 years, if I even have interviews that I still have on tape somewhere. Matter of fact, I threw away a bunch of cassettes at one point after we moved to Santa Barbara, not only because they'd been damaged by the weather, because I had stupidly left them out in the weather, but I also realized, but the stuff I'm doing now has to be better than the stuff I was doing then. Even though then I thought it was pretty good too. So where do you see Chakra Suite in the context of your overall work? Is it just as valid, valuable, beneficial for an individual to listen to today? It may not have the depth that your newer material has, or is there something about Chakra Suite that sort of, because of the passage of time, it is of great benefit even here in the 21st century, even though it was created back in the 70s?
The answer is yes and yes.
Thank you so much for calling. No, please elaborate on that.
Right. In other words, now, the recording that's out here is not the very first one I did in 1975. It's when I re-recorded when technology was better and that we could make a quieter recording.
Mm-hmm.
But that classic recording that was done on January 4th, 1985, again, the 10th year anniversary, those notes are what you hear now on Chakra Suite, the CD, or the MP3. And that day, that energy was classic, and it was relevant in 1985 and 95 and 2005 and right now. Because relaxation is timeless, because the chakras and our essential vibratory reality is timeless. It's eternal, and it's not something that gets stale dated so that you can't listen to this the year after it was recorded. And because the result of listening to the seven keynotes that are part of the Chakra Suite, as opposed to just listening to one keynote, which with iTunes, some people would try, they'd buy just the first keynote and think they'd get the whole experience. It's really a technology disguised as music. And it's a meditation that tunes up the energy centers in the way that the body is genetically and biologically designed, so that it's a complete system, and that system has been around for thousands of years.
Mm-hmm.
So when you listen to that, it is as relevant and effective now as ever, possibly even more so now, because as Rupert Sheldrake has proposed with his morphogenetic theory, that because, which is, many people know that from the 100th monkey phenomenon,
mm-hmm.
because so many millions of people have listened to Chakra Suite, have gone into meditation with it, so many chakras have been tuned up with that music, that as soon as you start listening to it, you tune in to the millions of people who've also been tuned up, and I believe that makes it even more powerful now.
Mm. I'm curious as to what you, Stephen Halpern, hope to or want to achieve through your work?
My goal has always been to contribute to the peace within an individual and on our planet, and to make up, to create more of a connection between an individual and their own personal spirituality, so that the music is a vehicle for them to tune in and tap into that, what the quantum physicists are calling the quantum field, or God, or again, the words are pretty much the same and vary through different religious and spiritual traditions, but the experience of going between the notes, in the spaces between the notes, in the gaps, in the gap between thoughts, like Deepak Chopra suggests, or Eckhart Tolle has picked up on, listening to music like mine gets you into the present moment. It shuts down the analytical mind that always wants to anticipate where the music is going. That's one of the great beauties of most music, but it's absolutely not what you want when you want to meditate, because it's so distracting. For meditation and spiritual practice, you need to be in the moment, in the present moment, in the now. And the power of now is always what my music helps make possible, and through that you get into the deeper levels of silence, and it's really in the silence that I have always found I make my deepest connection and have my most balancing experiences and experience the deepest levels of peace.
Yeah. It reminds me of the left brain, right brain test, where they had two groups. They were going to recreate a painting. And group A was given the painting, let's just say, of Mona Lisa. Group B was given another painting, and they were asked to recreate it. And group A drew theirs, and they were okay, but, you know, they were really kind of stilted, and they, you know, not really looking very much like the original. Group B, on the other hand, theirs were much closer to the original. Maybe the Mona Lisa wasn't the right one to use, but nonetheless, and here's the reason why group B's were closer to the original. Because group B were painting exactly the same painting, but the painting was placed on the easel for them to view upside down. So their, I guess it's the left brain, could not quite make out what it was. So it was abstract, and so they just kind of went with it. So when they turned theirs right side up, they were much closer to the original than the people who could make out what it was.
Wow.
And I find that that's as you describe what your music helps us to do, especially in meditation. Final question before we wrap up. Who is Stephen Halpern?
Well, as we've discussed before, I am an individual who whose mission has been to bring through this new genre of music, make it possible for people to use music for higher purposes and to create the soundtracks to do that with. And the final point I'd like to pick up on your last statement was that music is received not just through our ears, but we resonate on a cellular level, and that's why books that with titles like This Is Your Brain on Music miss the point that it's not just our cells, it's not just our brains, but our entire spirit, our entire energy field, and the energy field of the music is now something that people are opening up to, and that's part of what we respond to, and that's why when the field is from a higher vibratory rate and has the energy of inner peace in it, that is what we respond to. So I am an individual who is able to make that state audible through the use of sound, and it's my honor and privilege to share that with individuals, particularly at this time as things are getting more and more chaotic and stressful throughout the world.
Well, we thank you for sharing your time and your story with us here on Tell Me Your Story. And people can get in touch with you through your website, which is StephenHalpern.com. And that's Stephen, and that's spelled HALPERN.com, StephenHalpern.com. And we hope to stay in touch with you.
Absolutely. A pleasure speaking with you.
You bet. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. You're listening to the crystal sweet music from Stephen Halpern as we wrap up this program. Thought it would be appropriate. Until next Saturday at this same time, love to love.